Life is made up of decisions. Some are large, some are small, and some are uniquely individual, and some are thrust upon us. Either way, the decisions we make at these critical crossroads determine the direction of our life story. Welcome to our podcast, If I Knew Then What I Know Now, Insights Through the Rearview Mirror. By sharing the decision-making process of highly successful people in their own lives, and what they have learned both about decision-making and the importance of considering the alternatives, we hope to help you make better and more productive decisions in your life. This podcast will help you consider all your decisions through a new lens. My name is John Kramer, and along with my partner in crime, my brother Paul, we will interview a wide range of successful friends and acquaintances to understand the decisions they have made in life and what they have learned both about decision-making and the importance of reflecting on the process. If I Knew Then What I Know Now, Insights Through the Rearview Mirror, is brought to you by Industry Intelligence, providing decision-making solutions at your fingertips. Thanks for tuning into our Rearview Mirror podcast series. If you're a first-time listener, welcome. If you've joined us before on this journey of discovery to uncover the decision-making processes of interesting and engaging guests, welcome back. Our goal is to help you understand how to make better and more successful decisions. Our contention is every one of us has a fascinating story made up of many decisions over the course of our lives. It's the sum of these decisions that dictates the direction of our journey. And these are the insights we're trying to uncover. The key question we will be uncovering is, are there more successful decision-making frameworks or constructs? In essence, a better way to assess the alternatives on the table. Today, I'm excited to be speaking with Jim Weinstein, life consultant, career coach, and psychotherapist. If truth be known, my history with Jim goes back over 40 years from my first job in advertising. Jim was my account manager on Crest Toothpaste at the Benton and Bowles advertising agency when I was a junior assistant media planner. In fact, and I'm not sure if he remembers this, he was involved with my decision to leave media and move into account management. Jim, welcome. First, let me thank you for sending me on to what was an interesting life journey in advertising. And as I look back over your career, you've made a number of big life-altering, one might say, jarring decisions. As a starting point, do you have a go-to construct that you use when making decisions?
I think it's really important to not be locked into a rigid framework for decision-making. But I would say there are a few key principles that I have used in looking back on my decision-making processes. One, obviously, is to do a lot of internal reflection. Where are you? What are you happy with? What are you unhappy with? And sometimes it's helpful to have some kind of a test. A lot of people come to me with Myers-Briggs or StrengthsFinders. I have concerns about those because they tend to, particularly Myers-Briggs, have a sort of one-size-fits-all construct to them. But in any case, so taking inventory is important. Then talking to other people who know, in my case, who knew me, to get perspectives on the changes that I was contemplating, whether that was a career change or a change in location, a geographical location. And then tipping my toe into the water, tentatively trying out a new path. When it was a geographical change, it was trying to visit the prospective location a number of times. When it was a career or some kind of a life path change, it was seeing what I could experience about the possible change that would enable me to get a better view of it and have a sort of a visceral reaction to see how I resonated with it.
So consistent with a lot of people we're talking to, I think what you're saying, if I can interpret, is leverage your network, people who know you and you have a relationship with and have a conversation with them, and then walk before you run. Is that sort of what you're saying?
Absolutely. And a key ingredient in effective decision making, I think, is patience. And another one is diligence. So you can't look for a snap answer. You can't say, oh, I'm going to make this decision in the next 30 days. It needs to have room to breathe.
Yeah, it was interesting. We spoke to Drayton Howell yesterday, who, young kid, just left college on a full boat basketball scholarship, and he decided to start a pot business in California. And that was exactly what he said is one of the key things that he's learned in his journey is take your time. It doesn't have to happen overnight. You're going to make some mistakes. Live with those mistakes. That's right. Consistent and insightful. So let's, with that in mind, let's take a quick journey down memory lane. You graduated from Wesleyan with a degree in political science, which at the time, if I remember correctly, because I graduated from NYU with a degree in political science, it was a precursor to attending law school.
Correct. And
then you decided to go to business school and then advertising. And while not in its infancy, it was for sure the early days of advertising. And in my case, an advertising career was not on my radar screen coming out of school. What drove your decision to try your hand in communications?
You're right that the decision to major in political science was a precursor to the possibility of a law career. But my dad was a businessman, and business was always another possibility for me. After doing a lot of poking around, I decided that business school would be something I'd like better than law school. So my first year at Harvard, I took a marketing course. It was actually required. And the professor that I had was so engaging and stimulating that I just fell in love with the field. And that's what set me on the journey to advertising.
But it's interesting because if I remember those days when, and you probably felt the same way having worked on Procter & Gamble for so much of your career, is that coming out of business school, you could have gone to work as a brand manager. There were so many sort of other kinds of marketing approaches, and advertising was, I was not top of mind for me. And it was interesting to learn how you decided on advertising versus going to work at Procter & Gamble, for example.
Yeah, I did apply to some consumer packaged goods companies and got a couple of offers. I remember one from SC Johnson to be in Racine, Wisconsin, which compared with the glamour of New York City, just paled in comparison. But I think actually glamour was a big part of it. Also, my mom had done some market research work and was raving about the excitement in advertising agencies and the fun atmosphere, et cetera, et cetera. And all of that seemed appealing as well. And I had some great interviews with people at the advertising agency. They were people that I felt I could have a lot in common with and enjoy working with.
Yeah, as I look back over my time in the advertising business, those early days were incredibly exciting. The business was exploding, television was evolving, and great breakthrough advertising was being developed. As an aside, there was also a lot of money to be made. You were on the fast track. What made you decide to leave the business, and how did you maybe wrestle with that decision?
Really, what made me decide to leave the business was a complete reorientation of my value system that was caused by the death of my partner due to AIDS in 1985 and the loss of dozens and dozens of friends at that time. And looking at what I was doing in advertising just didn't seem to be meaningful given the plague that was going on. That said, I stuck with it for a few years. I left New York because there were just too many memories surrounding New York City, and moved to LA about as far away as I could get. Stayed in the advertising business for a couple of years, but my heart just wasn't in it anymore. And after those 2 years in LA, I left and ultimately wound up running a clinical trials organization looking at alternative therapies for AIDS.
How did you make it? What was the process you went through? You had to go back to school. When I think of going back to school, I get the sweats. And there was a lot of, I'm sure that there was a lot of struggling or a lot of decision making that took you from advertising and then running a clinical facility, then all of a sudden getting in, going back to school to start a whole new career.
But it wasn't all of a sudden by any means. It was talking to a lot of, I would say to people, yeah, I don't know what the hell I want to do for the second half of my career. When you look at me, and since you know me, what kind of things do you think you could see me doing? And psychology and therapists came up so much. I had hated psychology as a course in college. And so I was very hesitant. But I started poking around and I attended an informational session at Antioch University in LA. And that kind of modestly interested me. And then I said, what's the harm in enrolling for one semester and I'll try it out. And I loved it. So that's how I made that decision. But it took time.
So if I've interpreted correctly, the first years after getting your degree, you focused on helping people deal with anxiety and couples therapy in LA. But after 16 years, you moved to Washington, and it seems like you repositioned your practice more broadly into life coaching. There was a change of strategy there. And how did you evolve to that refocus?
Sure. There were a couple of streams that fed into that. One was a very practical one, which was that in Los Angeles, when I launched my private practice as a therapist, because of the work I had done with that clinical trials organization, I had good relationships with about 75 doctors, and they would refer their patients to me, and I had a great practice going. When I moved to Washington, I didn't have that kind of a network at all. I needed to find a way to try to launch a practice successfully without that. As I was thinking about how to do that, I thought, wait a minute, I've transitioned, at that point it was, into four careers, three major geographic moves. I'm a licensed therapist. I've had great success as a business guy. Why don't I tout that and let people know, hey, I've done all of these things successfully. I can help you do it too. And started advertising in a local paper and built a website and was fortunately successful in launching a practice very successfully.
Today, more than ever, you need to find the right information quickly and easily. Weeding through everything available is like drinking through a fire hose. Industry intelligence is like having your very own research assistant. The first place I go when I need to access data and insights for a client project or a new business solicitation is industry intelligence. Using their powerful patented technology and unique approach to information gathering, curation, and editing, they put everything I need in one place and serve it up in a user-friendly interface. Why not put a data and insight solution partner at your fingertips? For more information, call Chuck Bolcom at 920-891-5496. That's 920-891-5496. And now, for Rearview Mirror listeners, Industry Intelligence is providing a special offer, a 30-day trial membership, absolutely free, when you mention our podcast. So give Chuck a call today. Tell him you're looking for a way to make better decisions. Industry Intelligence, decision-making solutions at your fingertips.
But I guess my question is that life coaching is really pretty broad, and it's pretty different than anxiety and couples therapy, which I think was what your focus was in LA. And so was that a conscious decision that you made to change the focus of your practice?
Yes, it was. And what I found is that the talents that I have as a therapist are really critical to coaching people on broader issues, because what's most important is understanding where people are coming from, getting a feeling for that, and communicating effectively with them and listening. And those are all qualities that a good therapist has. So they're not as different as you might think.
So let me ask you a question.
It seems to me that therapy, if you boil it down, and I apologize for taking all your years of schooling and boiling it down to one sentence, but it really is a lot about making decisions. I would think that helping people understand that there are many paths in life, and how do you make decisions about what to do? How do you make decisions about relationships? How do you make decisions about how to react when your partner is hassling you or making you miserable or frustrating you? And do you talk about that decisions at all in your practice?
Oh, that's mainly
to play.
Mainly what I talk about, much more so than as a therapist. Yeah, sometimes you're helping people make decisions, but more often you're in my couple's work, you're trying to improve a relationship. Mm. Sometimes it's about, hey, is it time to break up or not? But most times it's not that. Mm-hmm. And dealing with anxiety, again, that's not really a decision-making process. That's learning techniques to calm yourself down. What I'm doing now is much more decision-oriented.
So you spent 19 years in advertising, I think 25 years as a psychologist and coach. Both, I think, are wildly different. Perhaps you could be considered counseling people to make good decisions. Can you tell us what you've experienced as the biggest barriers to people making good decisions?
Sure. Although, just a comment, John, they're not so vastly different. They both require, as I said earlier, an ability to connect and relate to people, mm-hmm, as the foundation for being an effective guide to them. And so that's a major thing that they have in common. I would say the biggest barrier to effective decision-making is anxiety. Feeling that either you have to do it faster than actually you need to, or feeling that if you make the wrong decision, your life is going to fall apart. A calm, measured approach to making decisions is a great recipe for success.
It's interesting. Our hypothesis here is that life is made up of many decisions, and there's not one single decision that sort of dictates the path that you end up on. It's almost turning a cruise ship. It takes many miles to make to change the direction, so that you make decisions. They may seem like large decisions to you at the time, but with the benefit of 2020 hindsight, it's a compilation of multiple decisions that drive the direction that you end up going.
That's right.
So when you think about it, it's to your point, it's not approach avoidance conflict as much as I'm going to make a bad decision and it's going to change everything.
And it's irretrievable if I do. And
correct,
that's not the case. Bad decisions can be great teachers, and failure can be a great teacher and help you uncover aspects of yourself you didn't even know were there. So while I wouldn't wish failure on anybody, if you run into it, it's not the end of the world.
But what's interesting is that I think, and I want to get your input on this, is we think about decisions as a binary situation. It's either good or it's bad. And to your point, that's really not the case.
Not at all.
And when we talked to Drayton Howell yesterday, that guy we talked to about starting a marijuana business, he was saying, look, I embrace failure because I learn more from my failures than I do from my successes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about Amazon, their whole approach to the world is fail fast, fail cheap.
Yep.
So I think that one of the things that I'd like you to comment on, if you would, is this whole idea of decisions are not binary, that you can learn from your decisions. And as you think about your practice and your conversations with your clients, how do you get them over that hump to say, okay, look, make a decision. It's not the end of the world if it's a bad decision. And then let's take a look at that and evaluate that.
Very often what I will do is ask people to look back on their history and talk to me about a time when they made a decision that didn't work out for them, mm-hmm, in their judgment. And then taking that apart and inevitably discovering that, yeah, while they might say it was a bad decision or it didn't work out, there were things that they learned. It was an opportunity to expand their knowledge or expand their perspective. That's a really effective technique for a lot of people. And very often they'll say, I don't know about any decisions that I've ever made that are as important as this one. And I got to poke at them a little bit, but usually people have experiences that you can have them relate back to that will reassure them that things aren't so dire.
Yeah. One of the things that we do at the end of these conversations is try to get people to look through the rearview mirror. So not wanting to put you into therapy, but looking through the rearview mirror, is there anything with 2020 hindsight you would have done differently?
No. I am at a place in my life where I am so blessed and I'm just really happy. So to say that if I'd only done this, things would have been better. How do I know that? How can anybody know that another choice would have led them to greater success? For example, coming out of business school, I was dying to go into the movie business and interviewed with Columbia Pictures, and they were about to hire me, but then the upper management wanted a woman. And so the person with whom I was in competition was female and she got the job. And for a few years, I lamented that. But would I really have been happier going into the movie business? Or would I have been better off to have stayed in advertising and made a lot more money? How can I possibly answer that? Chances are no, it would not have worked out because my heart wasn't in it.
Mm-hmm. You could have been the next Jeff Katzenberg. We'd be talking to you from your villa in Hawaii instead of Washington, D.C.
That's right.
are there any, as we think about it, are there any thoughts that you'd like to leave our listeners with in terms of their decision-making process or how they approach decision-making?
I'll just repeat that try to be as calm and measured about it as you possibly can and be curious. Talk to people who maybe have gone through the same kind of decision-making process that you're contemplating. Talk to people who are doing things you might be interested in doing or living in places you might be interested in living. Do online research. There's so much you can do, and don't feel that you have to make a decision immediately, unless of course you do. But in most cases, people don't. That's the advice I would give.
So if I boil it down to sound bites, because so many of us live in sound bites today, it really is leverage your network and appreciate that network. And that I think one of the big things that I took away from our conversation today is that nothing is got that burning urgency behind it, or very few decisions right. have that burning urgency behind it. Is it sit with it and sort of let it ruminate for a while before you push the button.
Yep.
And I know that I am guilty of that all the time, fire, ready, aim approach to life. And I think that's really valuable input, is that no matter how much it seems like there's a sense of urgency, it maybe is not that urgent for you to make a decision and you could take time to think about it.
Think about it and explore it. Yeah, absolutely.
One final thought this week as we close, Paul and I have been a bit disappointed in ourselves that we've not suggested to our listeners to reach out to us and assist us in our journey. So with this in mind, if you have any thoughts as to what you'd like to hear more of or have any guest suggestions, please reach out to us at info@rearviewinsights.com. That's info@rearviewinsights.com. We'll try to answer all your questions as quickly as possible. So until next week, this is John Kramer wishing you thoughtful and wise decision making.
You've been listening to Insights Through the Rearview Mirror. Each week, we speak with interesting people, exploring their decision-making processes to understand how these change their lives. Check out our past guests at www.rearviewinsights.com and click on the link to listen on iTunes. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate us, and leave a comment. Until next Friday, this is John Kramer, wishing you insightful and successful decision-making.